Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
No helping hands for Norwich City on the opening day of the Championship, a game in which they dominated and yet was probably, well, Philippe Clement certainly felt, was decided by a refereeing decision. Yep, the Championship is so back. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Adam Harvey and Paddy Davitt. We've just walked up the hill after Norwich City's opening day defeat to West Brom 2-1. Same scoreline, first and foremost, Paddy, as 12 months ago when they were beaten by Millwall on opening day. I suspect this time, though, the feeling around the whole afternoon will probably be slightly different because that's a game they deserve something from.
Today, absolutely, Connor, yeah. And we'll unpack it in very, very short order. But, you know, a game for me they didn't deserve to lose. Now, you can debate whether they did enough to win. The stats, and this is where Clement came from post-match, were all very heavily weighted. Certainly the chances they created, I think they had double West Brom. So, yes, there is an element to this, which is Norwich were not good enough when it mattered in the crucial moments in that final third. And, yeah, for me, there, some of the decision-making wasn't good enough, wasn't sharp enough. But I think for me, the bigger issue was, and as I say, we'll get into it and he'll probably dominate a lot of the early part of this podcast, was some major errors collectively and individually from the team of officials for the first West Brom goal. It's clearly handball. And Clement was very, very keen to put his point across post-match that he used words like ridiculous. He said, I saw that from 50 yards. It's not a debate about VAR because we know his stance on that, and he's very pro-VAR and wants it actually in the second tier in England. But that's, as he said, wasn't a VAR call today. That is simply a key call that has, at this level, has to be right. And it wasn't. And obviously it is crucial because, you know, 75 minutes on the clock, 0-0, and West Brom get a goal in that fashion. And okay, you know, they then added a second, and you could question some of the decision making from Norwich on that goal, as good a finish as it was. But nevertheless, yeah, it does leave a sour taste because I don't think if they'd have walked off that pitch and it was 0-0 or it was 1-1, yeah, okay, you'd say, you know, yeah, they need to do better in the final third, but they merited at least a point. So for me, that still stands. I don't think they deserve to tour around at the final whistle there, Clement and those players, as losers on the opening day of the season, as they were 12 months ago under Liam Manning's stewardship against Alex Neil's Millwall. And who would have known at that point that what fate was in store for him or Norwich for the first two or three months, and conversely how good a season Millwall would have. So maybe that is a cautionary note not to make too many hard or fast judgments from the result today. You know, there's many battles ahead, but yeah, maybe it just tempers a little bit of the optimism or the soaring expectation a little, because even allowing for what was a major defining moment in terms of that opening goal, they probably didn't do enough to impose themselves on West Brom and just finish off what was a lot of commendable work in terms of control and some of the way they move the ball through the pitch. But yeah, it is hard to not make this another pile on for the officials, because that was so bad, really. And for me, the takeaway was immediately Pelle Mattsson. He's the nearest player, outfield player to Hegbo, the West Brom goal scorer. He wasn't he was trying to con anybody, but he just immediately turned and put his hand in the air to indicate, and he had as good a view as anybody in the house. Clement likewise, he immediately wheeled away and had his arm in the air towards the fourth official. So very strange. And you know, as I put my point, as for what is a new season with new guidelines all designed to arm the officials with the ability to make the product better, we're back here again pleading for officials to get the big calls right. And in this game today, the one big call that they had to make, they got it wrong. So, you know, you can bang on all you want about time wasting at throw-ins or keepers feigning injuries or goal kick time allowances, but that's just window dressing for me. They have to still, at the start of a new season, be better on the key calls. And if not, we'll spend far too much of this season again, boys, talking about officiating when we'd like to forget about that and just talk about Norwich, good or bad.
Yes, and like you say, it is always worth making the point that Norwich, I feel, didn't do enough in the final third. I think that will be probably a theme that we come back to later on. But yeah, Adam, look, we have to start there, don't we, with the goal. I mean, from where we were sat in the press box, which maybe for people who don't know is kind of City stand, we're a lot closer to the snake pit than we are to the river end. So it will say that. In real time, I thought that looks like handball on the basis that the cross was high, it was fierce. He didn't head it. That was pretty clear. And also, it was pretty clear to me he hadn't got his foot to it and his arm was outstretched. So all of the evidence to me there suggested it was handball, and I was... Well, I was even further than Clement. So if he was 50 yards, then we were 70, 80 yards away from it. And in truth, the reaction, as Paddy says, I was probably just waiting for the goal not to be given. And I was a little bit surprised that more time went on, the more, it didn't seem to be getting ruled out. And obviously the celebrations continued. I made this point in the press room. I mean, it is interesting because I go back to that game against Southampton in December where Jovan Mokama... did he score with his hand, or his hand was involved in it? I think it did bounce up, to be fair, off a different part of his body. So maybe it's different in that regard. But yeah, Paddy's right. I mean, it's a shocker, isn't it? And to be fair, we get the luxury of watching it back and seeing it from angles, of course. But probably the more you watch it, I'm laughing because it is kind of laughable that's been allowed to stand, really.
Yeah, I mean, the referee missing it is bad enough, but the linesman who should be in view, perfect view of it, how you can miss a decision like that is beyond me, because the whole stadium, certainly the supporters down that end of the stadium in the sort of lower river end and, you know, the sort of corners of the stadium there, they're all claiming it. The whole Norwich City squad on the pitch, particularly those that were in close vicinity, are all claiming it. And I don't really think you get that sort of reaction if it's kind of a marginal one. All right, you might get a few claims, but you can kind of tell when something's sort of cut and dry, and that definitely was. And having watched it back on the replay in slow-mo numerous times, it just frustrates me because it comes back to that point about officials. We speak about them far too much, and we spoke about them last week, and maybe some of the baffling decisions of, in terms of yellow cards that would hand out to Norwich players. Yet, you know, a practical assault on Matthias Krigsgaard in the second half goes unpunished, and that led to an injury, which thankfully obviously wasn't a bad one because he was on the pitch today to net the consolation goal. But it's what makes it so frustrating, because as much as we spoke a lot about VAR, and I'm very anti-VAR, it's not really something I want to see brought into the Championship, because as much as it might get decisions right, I think decisions like that today, you shouldn't need VAR. That should have just been ruled out in real time, and that's just a wider concern, I think, about the state of officiating in this football, or in football now, in English football, particularly at kind of the... EFL levels. Tim Robinson's an experienced referee. He's managed in the Premier League. So the fact that you've got someone like that at the helm who's refereeing that game and still not able to see what was a very clear-cut goal that should have been disallowed is, pretty concerning.
Yes, I would agree with all of those points. And this is the thing, Paddy, isn't it? Because we know Philippe Clement is pro-VAR. We know the Championship clubs had a vote on VAR towards the back end of last season. And I'm sure he was probably really frustrated with the outcome of that, which was overwhelmingly to continue without it. I'm not particularly pro-VAR, but it's a difficult one where you kind of find yourself, don't really like it with VAR, but then without it, you look at decisions like that and you just think, oh, that is such a howler. That you do kind of kick yourself a little bit. So, yeah, maybe it is difficult in that sense. But I think Philippe's probably right, isn't he, Pad? And Adam's right as well. This isn't a VAR point for me. This is just competency, really, isn't it? And being in the right position to view what was a really blatant handball goal.
And on that point about being in the right position, I think I saw on your laptop there in the second half, there was a screen grab. And, of course, you know, you have to be a bit careful because you don't know quite at the angle of where the cameras are, but it looks like that far side assistant, or the one in front of the City stand, he's not up with play. He's not in line. So if he's not in line, and he's obviously, it's all happening on kind of on his blind side as well. So what chance has he got? Why isn't he up with play? You know, he's a Championship grade official. That team haven't performed to the level that you would expect of Championship officials in Azuka. Keep going back to in the key moments, you know, it's that's how you measure for me, you know, how good these officials are. And it's, let's just hope it is one isolated incident over the span of the season, because if we're having to get into these type of debates regularly, then it probably does fuel this belief, rightly or wrongly. I wouldn't profess to have the maybe the knowledge or the expertise about officiating, or frankly the desire to be bothered about the levels of officiating, but there is a sense that maybe it isn't currently at the levels it maybe has been in the past in terms of the quality. We've had this debate before. I mean, that then becomes about, well, how many people have been attracted to refereeing, because it is, you know, some of the negative elements and connotations that come with actually wanting to embark on something, whether it's in the amateur game or the pro game. So if the volume of prospective referees aren't being pushed into the system to then percolate upwards to the top, the best ones, then you're going to have an issue if you haven't got the numbers or the scale. So I don't know the answer to the problem, but there's no doubt that was not a collective decision from a team of officials that you would expect to happen at championship level. And like the one, the Ipswich, again, different, but in its own way, wrong as well. You know, was it the
Slimani one? Is that what you're talking about, the penalty?
The Ipswich one, no, there was another one towards the end of the season, and then, wasn't it? And it was like, where are these officials then placed the following week? And from that, you can deduce if internally, in terms of assessment.
It was the penalty, wasn't it, where Slimani basically hasn't made contact. I can't remember who the player was now, but I didn't make contact with the Ipswich player.
It was Ipswich, yeah. I wasn't sure if it was, but, well, the following week, that referee, I don't think refereed. I don't think the officials, the assistants, or if they did, it wasn't at championship level. So I'm definitely going to be looking at Mr. Robinson and his two assistants and where they are assigned next week, because I think that will be a very telling illustration of not us in media or fans who may or may not be biased, but actually the people who are tasked with overseeing the performance of these individuals, you know, whether they have made a bad error, because if so, then you would like to think that they won't be anywhere near a championship game next weekend.
Yeah, well, as Adam said, he's typically a Premier League referee, so it's maybe we'll put that there. I mean, fundamentally though, Adam, just the final point, and then we will talk about where Norwich was short as well, because this is always about footballers as well, and Norwich clearly haven't done enough to win the game today, so we'll get into the weeds of that. But I mean, equally, and maybe this links to that point, it's just boring, isn't it, having to sit here and you know, scrape through slow motion, screen by screen, frame by frame plays of what officials have missed. I don't think you need to do that in this case. It's not one of those where, you know, it's marginal, or it's hit his knee and then his hand, and that's not a difficult decision to make. But yeah, it's just boring that's on opening day, where there's so much excitement about football returning, that we're talking about officials again. And I'm afraid, not to rain on Paddy's parade a little bit, I fear it won't be the last time this season either, given what we've seen over the last 5 years, which is, as again, to balance a lot of turgid football as well on top of that, and a lot of poor Norwich City performances. But yeah, it's just boring. It's a shame that's the way the opening day has ended.
It is, and it's basically 2 weeks running now that you can debate refereeing decisions. You know, thankfully last weekend it didn't really matter in the sort of grand scheme of things, because Norwich put MK Dons to the sword. But in a game like today, championship opener, 3 points on the line, so much optimism, so much excitement. You felt it around the stadium before the game, the atmosphere from both sets of supporters, that, you know, the new season's here. You know, Norwich have relatively controlled the game for 75 minutes, and then the game's kind of been swung really by that goal, because, you know, if that goal happens and Norwich are 3-0 up and it's just a consolation, then maybe there's not quite so much scrutiny or attention on it. Probably still rightfully would be some scrutiny, but not quite to the same level of degree, because from Philippe Clement's point of view, Norwich have, you know, put themselves in a position where they're taking something from the game, still in a position at 0-0 where they can go and capitalise and maybe grab a goal and win the game, and then within a matter of seconds the ball's in the back of the net, wrongfully, in terms of the goal that was allowed to stand, and that just changes the whole, you know, momentum and perspective of the game. So yeah, it's really frustrating, but I do feel like you that it's not going to be the the final time we have to talk about officials and poor decisions over the course of a season, because it felt like we had to do it far too much last season, plenty of other seasons, and my mind just goes back to quite a few decisions that I can sort of think of off the top of my head last season. I remember a few actually with Ipswich. I think Birmingham had one ruled out where the ball clearly went, stayed in play, but then they said it went off and they scored against Ipswich. And just goals like that that can matter at the end of the season, where, you know, you finish ninth and you needed one more point to finish eighth. And I know there's that sort of saying that things even themselves out over the course of the season, and maybe
there's actually any evidence for that though,
but that's the thing. I don't think you can, because inevitably if Norwich get to the end of the season and they miss out on something by one point, then everyone's going to go back to decisions like that and say, if that goes in the right favour as it should have done, then it could be a different story. So it's really frustrating. Maybe that's why the calls for VAR from managers I can kind of understand, but again, as we sort of outlined earlier on, decisions like that today shouldn't really matter whether VAR is in play or not.
Maybe this is one to jog your memory, Paddy. Can you remember at the back end of this season, actually, we were speaking to some senior City people about this, and they were speaking about how they'd essentially got like a league table internally of decisions that were wrong. And I think Norwich were either bottom of that list or, well, top, however you look at it, I suppose, in terms of decisions wrong that they'd either got apologies for or that they were told would be overturned. So this isn't going to help that feeling that maybe they had last season.
So they're top of one table tonight then, Connor?
Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting as well. I'm sure you'll put it to Philippe Clement before the game before the game next weekend about any potential clarification they had. But again, what does that do in the wider picture?
Just on a small yet related tangent, I did very was keen to see, not that I'm saying he's a confrontational individual, Mr. Clement, but I was very keen to see if he strode out onto that pitch at full time and headed straight for the officials, as he's done once or twice last season, I recall. No, he didn't go there. He just went to his players, and then the officials, ringed by stewards, were escorted down the tunnel and asked him directly on that aspect post-match. And going back to this point about, you know, maybe new guidance, there would appear from what he was saying that Championship managers have been asked not, maybe it's a respect thing, maybe,
well,
not.
Farkle got sent off for it last year, didn't he?
Exactly, maybe off the back of that, yeah. That not to have those very public-facing kind of disagreements play out there, and if they want to approach the officials, maybe do it in the sanctuary of the dressing room area. So that would have been quite... I'd have sold tickets for that if Clement was able to go and confront the officials, because, yeah, I think it would have needed quite a degree of self-control, really. I'm sure, not to, you know, just try and get some sense of what they saw, what they didn't see, why they arrived at that decision. I mean, for me as well, very bizarrely, unless there was, you know, full audio comms between the officials and the fourth official, he didn't even come over. It was almost like some of the Norwich players were telling the ref, imploring the ref to come and have a conversation with the nearside assistant. But
they looked confused.
No, they just,
to be honest.
There was nothing of that nature. But then if the assistant you assume had seen something in real time, he would have flagged, wouldn't he? So the fact that he just walked back towards the halfway line would suggest he hadn't seen anything. So maybe that would have been a pointless exercise. But you'd still like to have thought they could have had some sort of dialogue, just the referee saying to the assistant, you know, are you sure, convinced that was what you saw is how it played out? But the fact that there was no dialogue, but as I say, we don't know if there was earpiece comms. So did you see it? No, I didn't see it. No, okay, yeah, what day of the week it is, yeah, okay, all right, let's carry on.
Indeed. And let us carry on, because, as we said, there's a football element to this, which I'm sure will be in some places the riposte, because there's always the official element, and then there's what Norwich City didn't do. I mean, I've got the statistics, which, of course, they don't tell the full picture, admittedly, but I think they tell a pretty similar picture throughout all of them in terms of what Norwich City did well today, and there were elements that they did well, and maybe the areas and the very clear areas that they were short. I mean, I'll read through some of the stats here. They've had 54% of possession, expected goals, if you like that metric. If you don't, it's essentially the quality of chances they created. Well, that was significantly higher than West Brom today. They've had 20 shots, 7 on target. For me, this is the key one. Total touches inside the opposition box. Norwich had 33, West Brom 10, and goalkeeper saves. Vladan Kovacevic has made one. Max O'Leary, who had a very good game this afternoon, has made 7, which I think is the highest since James Beadle made 8 for Birmingham last season in what was a very good individual performance. So there's probably lots, Paddy, to unpick there, in that Norwich got in good areas. They had plenty of shots. I mean, again, just to drill down in those, 6 of those came outside the box. So it's not a huge amount in terms of, you know, pot shots from range. There were decent opportunities that they had today, and the majority of those from open play as well. How do you interpret that? Because there will be a school of thought around it's a lack of quality, it's poor decision making. But I don't know, there will be some who take solace from those numbers and say, well, it's a sign that actually the performance level was good enough. So where do you sit in terms of that debate?
It's all of those really, isn't it? I mean, I thought the performance was good enough to get something, win or a draw, and those metrics back up that they had more than ample sights of the West Brom goal to have converted that into, you know, goals. So yeah, you have to question the clinical element. You do have to question the decision making. There was 2 or 3 I thought, instead of taking a shot, just square it across. I'd even put in the opening chance for McLean. I mean, it was a good save from O'Leary 4 minutes in. He's played a 1-2 with Slimani and he's tried to bend it into the far corner. He's got Torre to his left. Much like the goal, I wasn't at the game obviously last weekend, but what was the goal they scored? Was it the second goal where Torre squared it, I think, and they Slimani finished it? Yeah. No, he could have took the shot away. But and Clement has spoken about this more generally last season about, you know, it's...
It's making a good chance a great chance.
Exactly, yeah. You know, enhance the opportunity. And don't be concerned about that player scores, this player scores. It's ultimately a team game and it's about winning the game of football. So, yeah, I think they'll look back at the footage on in the coming days and I'm sure that will be picked up on, that they got themselves into very good opportunities. They could have amplified those opportunities with better decision-making. They didn't. But I guess you have to, and I know they had, you know, fairly one-sided cup win last weekend, but you know, it is the first league game of the season, it is the first proper test, if you want to put it that way, so inevitably, you know, things aren't going to have clicked seamlessly at this stage. There has to be an expectation or an understanding that is the case, and you know, cut them some slack there. But you know, if we got 5-6 championship games into the season and this pattern was still repeating itself, chance creation not an issue, touches in the final third not an issue, but the goals aren't following suit, then you start to, you know, need to ask some questions about, you know, is it personnel, is it something deeper than that? Because we've seen under Clement last season, you know, that wasn't something they struggled to do, score goals to embellish the chances they created. So I think it's too small a sample at this stage to jump to too many conclusions really, other than to say that, you know, both in terms of clinicalness and also decision-making, they could have been better today than what they were.
It's a funny one because, Adam, Paddy says far too small a sample size to make any kind of meaningful conversation out of it. But I think about Middlesbrough last season, where this was kind of an ongoing debate all season, where the numbers were always good, they had plenty of touches, they had plenty of chances, and it was just probably the finishing edge. And I know up there it was a lot of debate about, well, how much of that is down to coaching and how much of it is kind of just a quality point and a decision-making point that we discussed. Because you think about what is the job of a coach? It is to put players in position where they create opportunities, and it's about getting the ball as much as you can into the final third of the opponents and as little as you can into yours. And clearly those numbers show that Norwich have done that in terms of, what, more than third the amount of touches in the final third. They had the opportunities today. It's just a quality point. And now, as Paddy says, the next bit is going to be, A, can they replicate those numbers? And I think, to be fair, the sample size from last season suggests they can. But then B, when they do get in those positions, are they clinical enough to actually turn that into goals and points, the stuff that people actually care about in terms of whenever you speak about underlying numbers? But for the opening day, I think if you want to take a positive from the fact, it's the fact that they were getting in opportunities and they were boasting those numbers in the first place, because that suggests, as Paddy said there, you play that game 9 times out of 10, Norwich City walk out away probably 9 times out of 10 with a significantly better result than what they've got today.
Yeah, they always say at the sort of start of a season you want positive performances as much as you do results, because everybody wants results. But I think you'd be a bit more concerned if it's, you know, difficult games and you're just maybe nicking late goals or certain things are falling for you and you're maybe getting a little bit of luck. You probably want that sort of quality of performance over the course of a 90-minute game where you're showing that you can create opportunities, you can get yourselves in the right positions, and generally speaking then you can start to almost put that into to further games as you move through the season. So I think you've got to take that as a positive. They proved themselves last season under Clermont in the second half of last season, that they're going to get chances, and they've got players there that will bury them. You know, Touré had a few opportunities today that he'll probably be a little bit frustrated with, that he didn't do something a little bit more with it. Obviously got Mukama to come back into the mix as well, and I think he proved, you know, that I still feel he could become their sort of starting striker over the course of this season, if you want to coin it like that, because I think every player has to play their part. But I think if you're going for someone who in most games will give you the all-round kind of performance from a striker, then I think he's more aligned to be able to do that. So you got that in the mix. You know, they're clearly looking to maybe strengthen as well on sort of the left side as well. So I think there's still a lot of areas there that will come to, hopefully be pieced together, and maybe they will add those little elements that they didn't quite have today to get the result. But I think you've got to take the positives. It's still early days. There'll still be a little bit of rustiness. I mean, Ewan spoke about it in the podcast we've done during the week, where it can take players, you know, 5 to 10 games to maybe get up to 100%. And it's that sort of final 10-15% maybe of your game that's not quite fully sharpened in some of those opening games. So I think for all those purposes, I'm not hugely concerned. I'm going to take the positives from the performance. And, you know, we go back 12 months and I think, you know, back to maybe that Portsmouth away game when Norwich were poor and managed to get a result. But ultimately what happened as they moved through the autumn period, they were 23rd in the table, and they needed Philippe Clermont in to come and drag them out of a very difficult and sticky situation where Philippe Clermont, maybe some of those early games, I think of, you know, the Oxford performance, they were pretty good for most of that game. Scrappy goal they concede at the end, but generally as they move through the season, those positive performances started to generate them results, and they started to get some momentum, and their players sort of coming back into the mix. So yeah, I think for all those reasons, I'm going to be positive on this Saturday evening.
This is also, Paddy, a template that we would probably expect them to face more often this season in terms of teams sitting behind the ball, making it difficult for them, sitting and being content with a point coming to Carrow Road. That isn't the case, as Adam said, for a lot, particularly the first half of last season, maybe even slightly deeper into that. It was only towards the back end we saw a little bit more of that. So, again, probably conflicting ways of looking at it in terms of positive that they've had the sort of success they had today in terms of chance creation against that kind of tactic and that kind of element. I think James Morrison said after the game he probably was a little bit frustrated with how defensive his team were. Again, that's another sign on how Norwich have imposed themselves on the game. But then equally, you can look at it on the flip side and say, well, it's about then adding the quality to it, and maybe they're points that can be joined up, and that is going to be the next step, isn't it, over the course of the season, but also a difficult start. But Adam's right, you go back to, I don't want to compare it to this, but you go back to that title winning season they had in 18-19. What was it, one win in the first six, but the performances were good. So that probably at this stage is the most important thing about performances and polishing some of those rather than looking at results.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And that point Adam makes about, you know, they early last season they went and scrapped their way to a win against Portsmouth, but you know, they were reliant on Kovacevic or very last ditch blocks of defending. We saw that at Coventry, the draw they got there early in the season. Also trying to fix Stoke away as well when they were going quite well.
Blackburn, even though they won that day.
But it's not sustainable, and it wasn't sustainable. So for me, I'd much rather see that today, where large parts of the performance you couldn't fault. And Clermont said, I think his payoff line before he departed into the night post-match was, listen, I hate losing more than anybody, but I can't be disappointed with what those players have given me today in many respects. They hit the markers I would have set for them before the game. So much better to work out from that base than, you know, they've maybe clung on and haven't deserved to get anything from the game. And that was a pattern that continued into the early part of the season. I think you can, whether it's Mukama coming in and others coming out, whether it's potential additions in wide areas, whether it's just Cernach and Jallo back put properly into the mix, I think there's enough personnel options there that if this trend did persist, that you could, you could look for remedies within this current squad. So, yeah, by no manner of means. I mean, maybe we're wanting too much from the opening league game of the season. The whole package is there from game one of 46, potentially more if they get into the playoffs. You know, the performance marries up with the result. And again, you know, as Clement has been very keen to point out all through pre-season, a little bit of expectation management. It's still a very young squad. There's new players they're trying to integrate. There's players coming back from injury. They're trying to bring them up to speed. There's a lot of facets and a lot of strands that he has to pull together. And if there are elements that were not disjointed but not quite firing today, you know, maybe you have to just cut them some slack and, you know, accept that's where we are at this stage. But, you know, I think I would inclined to agree with Clement. You would walk away from there surely as a Norwich fan feeling still pretty positive that, you know, that's a team both individually and collectively that are going to go on and have more good days than bad in the Championship this season.
Yeah, look, I've put in our podcast, and look, we'll get Paddy's towards the end as well in terms of what he thinks. He missed that pod in midweek, but I think West Brom will have a good season. I could quite feasibly see them being top 10. I think I put them 8th in my predictions. They're going to be significantly better. They had a really good run towards the back end of last season. So this is not the same team that just scraped to survival. And I think structurally you saw that. And yet we're in a situation where we're talking about Norwich City having dominated an opponent like that. I think that's a really encouraging place to be for week one, irrespective of result. And sometimes as well, it works both ways, doesn't it? Because sometimes, and maybe last season at Portsmouth and Blackburn was an example of that, you can win early on and it doesn't half paper over some cracks in terms of where you are performance-wise that come and hurt you down the track. So I think even though they've lost today, this performance is a better place to be with, like you say, Paddy, there was plenty, right? I mean, Pelle Mattsson today I thought was probably as rusty as I've seen him. There were other examples as well. So, yeah, look, I think it probably mixed emotions in terms of how that has unfolded today. That brings to an end part one. Part two, I get the feeling we're probably going to be talking about wingers and maybe what the last few weeks of the window has in store. We'll see you in just a moment. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, reflecting on another opening day defeat for the Canaries. I'm going to get up in the moment the stats of their opening day. They don't make for the best reading, I think it's fair to say, this century. But for all the reasons we spoke about in part one, not the worst place to start in terms of a performance level. Paddy and Adam are still with me. Adam, let's come to you first and foremost whilst I get up that record of Norwich City on opening days. What did you make in terms of their attacking setup? And this probably serves as a nice segue into a wider conversation about their wingers, because we saw Paris Mogoma play on the left today, albeit drifting very central. Slimani obviously kept his pace, but maybe his been a slight issue with him. It's that consistency of performance, isn't it? Very effective in the round the box, but has a bit of a habit for me anyway, fading a bit in and out of games. And I thought there was a lot of encouragement for Brooks as well. And as we spoke about in the last segment, it certainly wasn't chance creation that was an issue. It was that final probably product. What did you make of that attacking unit as a whole?
Yeah, not quite the same levels of fluidity maybe as we saw last week, but that could be sort of down to the level of opposition they were playing against. You know, no disrespect to MK Dons, but West Brom are a significant step up in terms of quality, and Norwich are going to face that a lot more this season than they will what MK Dons presented to them in the first sort of 10 minutes of that game, which was, you know, so much space in behind. And yeah, you didn't feel like the Baggies gave Torre quite so much joy today in that respect. But yeah, I think you felt like a lot of Norwich's attacks really came down the right with Brooks. I think that's probably the downside of not having that natural left winger, sort of in a profile of Brooks in what Ahmed would give you if he would be fit and available to start. Because, yeah, I think they struggled a little bit more to kind of, yeah, create. They obviously created a lot of opportunities, but maybe not as many clear-cut opportunities as what they would have liked. And that probably was a bit of a byproduct of, yeah, sort of having a bit of a, yeah, I don't know how to sort of best put it, but not kind of a, yeah, attacking sort of trio maybe behind the striker that you would naturally want to go with. You'd probably want your sort of two out and out wingers and your number 10. Slimani, I thought, struggled. Yeah, didn't quite look the same player that maybe we saw at different points in that purple patch last season. Actually contrast it maybe to his performance against West Brom away from home last season, and very very quiet. The quality maybe in the final third was lacking. But yeah, some bright moments from Brooks, particularly in the first half. You know, sort of not afraid to take on his man, which I quite like. And I think if Norwich do decide to dip into the market and bring someone in on the left, then you want someone like that, I think, on the left. Because it's yeah, inevitable with Touré and your starting 11, whether that be Mukama, there's goals there to be found. It's probably just going to take a little bit of time for them all to click again. But I don't fear. I think they've got, as Paddy outlined sort of just before we pause, so many options now. You run through the team and some of the attacking players they've got and some of the quality attacking players they've got, the depth and the ability to hopefully change games off the bench. You know, they managed to obviously get the goal through a few substitutions, combining in sort of the latter stages of the game. They're going to need more of that as well over the course of the season. So, yeah, I think there's still enough positives there to take. But, yeah, I think for Clermont's kind of points that he made in the press conference on Friday, I think they still want to add someone on the left.
Yes, indeed. And we'll broaden that conversation out in a moment. I promised you those opening day stats. So here they are, courtesy of Steve Sanders, NCFC Numbers himself, who says their record on day one of the league season since 2003 reads, played 24. Do you guys know how much they've won or how many games they've won in that time?
Three
is the answer, yeah. Three wins, eight draws, 13 defeats. They scored 24 and conceded 48 and taken 17 points. For an extra point, Adam, in this imaginary quiz that we're playing, do you know who they came against?
Huddersfield's won, yeah. Alameda. Hull, Alameda. I'd imagine that
the other one was 2002.
I was thinking in my head it's like Grimsby, but
bang on, look at that, brilliant, there you go. So Norwich typically aren't great performers on opening day, as long as they we'll caveat it with this fact, as long as they have a better start than they did last season, which isn't particularly a high bar. What did you make of it, Paddy? Obviously Diallo coming back into the mix again today. I mean, it's again, we talk about small sample size, it was just for half an hour for the first time in about 6 months. There was one really nice moment that probably stood out to me where he drove down the left and there was a lovely incisive pass into the box where Schwartau was, and he laid it off for Kellen Fisher and the shot got blocked, and I think they went up the other end and scored. But that's a positive sign. Obviously, as we left, for maybe people that don't know, there was an internal game going on the pitch at Carrow Road, which included Antti Siinats, Gabe Forsyth, Darlan Yongwa, other players as well within that, alongside players who didn't get minutes today for whatever reason. So
Stacey was playing, Medic.
Stacey was playing, Rory McConville, I think, was playing. So good kind of use and good in terms of where those players are coming back. Jovan McCarm is training individually. Errol Mundell-Smith is training individually. There's signs of kind of light at the end of the tunnel. That's going to be some tough choices for Clermont to make. But yeah, in terms of Diallo coming back and that attacking stable that we spoke about, because Magoma, I felt, had some nice moments. There's a lovely ball to Kellen Fisher for the header. There was there was a nutmeg and he danced into the box for another. But yeah, you kind of always feel like he's drifting in central areas. And it just, yeah, felt, barring Brooks, there wasn't a lot of pace in that attacking lineup today.
No, you say that, but there was a couple of moments in the first quarter of the game where, you know, Krizeni was almost inside winger position there. He was very advanced because obviously the Norwich back line had gone to squeeze the play, condense the game in the West Brom half in that first 20 minutes or so. And there was some nice link-up play there. I thought he went on the overlap and was retaining that width, but it's not, you're right, it's not his natural game. It doesn't seem to me be where he wants to operate. He wants to get on the ball, he wants to be dictating in those pockets in front of the centre backs. And as also you could say the same about Schwarte, he came on, he played in the 10, so you know that's why there is a clear point of difference between those two on the left hand side and Papagiallo, because he is a natural wide player who wants to, yes, he can come inside, but I think he's also capable of retaining that width and he's got that pace and guile as well. Far more aligned for me to Brooks than either of those two. And clearly that was the calculation with Jurassic as well, and allowing him to go back to his homeland. So, yeah, in a post-Ali Ahmed world, I think Papagiallo is a very important asset. And what we just need to see now is, not the only one by any means, but you look at his debut season in green and yellow, and it was really defined by fitness-related, muscular-related absences, prolonged absences. They just need to get that to a point that's in the past now, and he's available game in, game out, and physically robust enough to deal with what the workload that is required to play in the Championship, particularly in a very demanding position in a Clermont side. You know, it's not just what you do with the ball, it's what you do out of possession as well. And you know, if they can get that and crack that code with him, then I don't have any doubts that I think he could be a player who gets a lot of minutes in a Clermont side, because I think he's far more aligned to what Clermont wants in terms of a wide profile than either Schwartau or Mahoma. And obviously, if they do go into the market between now and the end of the window and add another one, you know, that'll be quite telling as well. And I'd be absolutely flabbergasted if it isn't somebody in the Brooks and Jallo mould rather than the alternative. So, yeah, keep him fit, build him up now. You know, after Millwall this coming weekend, there's that League Cup trip to Cardiff. For me, you've got to be looking at that for some sustained minutes for him and Cernac, because it's all about bringing them to a point where you're not in fitness management mode with them. They are proving that that isn't the overriding equation or part of the equation with those players, and it is just, can they affect the game in a positive fashion as to whether they're in or out of his side?
Yes, agreed. And that probably does bring us into a conversation on where they are, Adam, in wide areas. We'll speak about Mate Jurasek as well. He's had a very interesting day. I've actually got something to play on that in a couple of minutes. So, yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment. But I think there is naturally now some debate, because he's obviously gone out of the building. They've lost Ali Ahmed, obviously, to a serious long-term injury. They are essentially two wingers down in that area. I know they've added Brooks and maybe one further up or whatever. So, however that works out in terms of a kind of average. But I think there is a general feeling they are light, particularly on that left side. Some will now maybe argue on the right. I mean, it is an interesting one, because you look at it purely as bodies. We've got Diallo, who we mentioned today, coming into the mix. Antti Siinats is going to come back. We still don't know what position Philippe Clermont sees him in. Emmanuel Forsen is still in the building. Jovan Mokoma played on the right a little bit last year. We've seen Magoma play out wide today. Oscar Schwartau's played out there. So it does feel like they've got options. It's just, do they have enough options close to what Philippe Clermont wants? What's your view? Are you, and we discussed, I think we all agree they need one. Is there an argument that they need two? Is that realistic? What's your thoughts?
I think you always want to be greedy and, you know, have another option. So if you said to me there's two wingers here that are going to come in and they're more aligned to what Philippe Clermont wants in terms of wide options, then I don't think I'd be turning it down. But the difficulty is, you know, they've got so many bodies, you outlined a lot of them there, who are capable of playing in those positions. And the problem is to be able to keep everybody happy and keep that unity that maybe they, yeah, managed to get a lot of joy from last season in terms of the squad. You kind of need players to be playing minutes week in, week out. And if you've got too many bodies and it feels quite a big squad already, to add another two to that group probably then does lead to question marks, particularly if they can limit the injuries and players are readily available, because you're not going to need them. There'll always be that sort of wider issue where if you get 2 months down the track and a couple of them pick up, you know, injuries and they're out for quite a few, you know, months or weeks, whatever it might be, then there'll always be kind of, yeah, that point of going back to the summer and saying, why did we not add another one? But I think in the here and now, just in the sort of financial landscape they're going to have to navigate as well, to me it feels like one, probably more than two. But if you can keep Diallo fit, you can keep Brooks fit, then you add somebody else in there as well, and you've got other bodies there, as you outlined, that are capable to play out in those wider positions, then hopefully over the course of certainly now until January, they'd have enough there to sort of get themselves through. And yeah, you still want the quality, obviously, and you don't want to limit that. But there will be different games as well where maybe some of those players that are maybe not so much aligned to what Philippe Clermont wants in terms of pace and directness from wingers might be better suited to certain games if you're going away from home and you want, yeah, to be a little bit more sort of, yeah, robust maybe, and you want a few more physicality players sort of to throw into the mix, then you could do that. So yeah, in the here and now, I feel like it'll be one, but if you offer me two, then I wouldn't turn it down.
I think if you offer Philippe Clermont two, you wouldn't turn it down. But yeah, in the world of SCR and in the world of the financial picture in a squad that already has over 30 bodies, I think it's unrealistic to expect two. I feel Paddy's probably going to be alone, and it'll probably be quite creative, probably what I'm thinking on both fronts. And I think that still kind of feels like there is going to be a financial element to this where they may well have to get at least another body, possibly even two out before they can even entertain a world where they bring another one in. I would say probably one now. We're in a post-Jurasek world. I mean, it was interesting, I guess, to maybe gently segue this into the Jurasek point, just what we've spoken about in terms of, and you spoke about it there, profile. you think about Philippe Clement's system, it is a lot more kind of what we class as traditional wingers in that sense, where there's pace. And I think with Brooks, there's variation in that he can float inside, but predominantly he's comfortable in those wider channels as well and taking players 1v1. Mentioned Diallo there as well. It does feel like if you're kind of thinking a spectrum of wingers from Jurasek to Brooks, feels like they probably would look to bring one in who's a lot closer to the Brooks model than what they've just lost in Jurasek, for the reasons that he outlined yesterday, in terms of they've already got a lot of players who can deliver that final ball.
Yeah, he was very clear in his remarks to you yesterday that Jurasek is another example of, as is Schwartau, Slimani, Mahoma, players who like the ball into feet and then are looking for runners. He wants runners, clearly. He wants runners in those wider areas. Going back a step, I think Cernac is clearly going to be a right-sided option. I don't see how he, at this stage now, threatens Toure or Mukama in terms of central, or Chris Gordon for that matter.
Or any of the number 10s, really.
No. So I you know, can be proved wrong on this, but I think he, in terms of, okay, you've got Brooks, but what have you got else on the right-hand side? I think it is now him and Cernac will vie for that role. And so, therefore, on the left, that's the priority. You know, no Ahmed, we would think, reasonably assume for the rest of the season. Schwartau isn't that option, so it's somebody to supplement and support and challenge Papa Diallo. And yeah, like you, I think the financial element to this is obviously a piece of potential business. They had no prospect or felt they needed to go down this route, therefore they won't have budgeted for this, so as a result they will have to be, I think they'll be have to be creative to put the funds in place. But then I think the funds that will be going in place will be for their one, use Yongwa as an example, you know, another free agent / loan player that they're not going to have to commit a fee for. And then, you know, likewise with Yongwa, can they sell them a vision of the ambition that the club have and where they want to take it under Clement? And yeah, I mean, the reality is you whether it's Norwich or any other club, you start a summer window, I'm sure, with these are the positions we need, this is the business we're going to do. I would be flabbergasted if there's any club in certainly the top end of the English game that they execute a summer window that looks in every aspect what it looked like on the day it opened, because, you know, you get injuries, you get players maybe you didn't feel were going to move on and do, whether it's the player side instigating it or whether it's the clubs instigating it. So there has to be that inherent flexibility in terms of recruitment and strategy and analysis and drawing up profiles. But it's one thing to be deft in terms of always being ready for an eventuality, and it's another having the finances in place to be able to actually know, press the button and go and bring one of these in when you haven't really felt you're going to need to legislate for that. So, yeah, as you said, you know, it probably will take another out maybe. And we know that they got to a position with both Medic and Forson that they were willing to listen to offers. Maybe that changes a little bit with Forson now, just in terms of headcounts. Player you spoke to him about yesterday, what does the future hold for Liam Gibbs? You know, I could still feasibly, despite what Clement said, I could still feasibly see a world where he's not part of it beyond this window, in terms of maybe a loan, which was looked like where he was heading in January before Mattsson got injured. So again, it's just moving parts wherever you look. And you know, I think the reality is they probably will try to do one now. Clement more or less confirmed that was the case, but having that desire to do it and actually been able to get one over the line now for all the elements that they have to align is going to be challenging. There's no doubt about it, because we're not quite there yet, but you feel like we're ticking down to the final countdown. The season, certainly in the Football League, is underway now, and that's always a bit of a marker that the transfer window doesn't have a huge amount left to run. So yeah, let's see where they go. I think probably overseas would seem to me to be the way to go, unless they're willing to bide their time and they can find a Premier League loan option. But I think, again, it feels like time is of the essence here, and you can't really put too much store by Diallo being fit and available from game minute one now of these games. I think you've still got to be a little bit cautious with him, and you're still going to need to have alternative options if it isn't going to be a Schwartau or a Mahoma like today. So yeah, course, if you're Clermont, you want it in before Millwall. I don't get any sense, we don't get any sense from being down there today that that's likely. It'll be this side of Millwall, but equally, you know, if things were to happen with a Medic, for example, or a Forsen in the coming days, then, you know, maybe that allows them to accelerate their, what is now clearly a desire to bring in a left-sided option.
Yeah, I'm with you. I very much see it as that right side being Brooks and Siennats. And then if you go on the left side, it's Diallo, and it feels like you've got a hole there, doesn't it? So that would make sense in terms of the squad planning. And then you've got players that we mentioned, Makama, Schwartel, Magoma, who supplement that, who provide you with an option should you need it. You know, break glass in case of emergency, which was certainly, I'm not sure there'd be any glass left off the basis of last season. So, yeah, that's where I feel they are. But you're right, in terms of the SCR, and this is something that Clermont spoke about yesterday. It is something that they're going to have to navigate. And I think he's right as well, because it is strange and it is bizarre that you've got a situation where clubs with the financial power of Wrexham and Birmingham don't comply in the same rules that Norwich do, purely on the basis that they've been in League One in the last 3 years. That doesn't necessarily feel right to me, albeit I know there's a willingness to try and bridge to the gap. But, you know, it feels fairer like a club like Lincoln, for example, is in that. I don't know, maybe there is something you can and can't do about that. But that's interesting. And the point I would make on outgoings is, even for top-level teams, so let's take someone like Yakov Medic, if you wanted to go and place him in the Netherlands, the financial reality of that league, even at the top level compared to the Championship and the money he might be on here, makes that very difficult. And I think this is not just a Norwich City issue. You look across the Championship and this window, there's been a general trend, and that's why I think it's been slow and it hasn't maybe been the most busy window in the world, is yes, because of the financial rules, but also the disparity in money between leagues in Europe and shopping in the Championship, because clubs know that if they want to come to England to buy players, loan players, as a general rule, it is more expensive. And that makes it more difficult for Norwich in the world of player trading that they are in. One player who is out of the door, Matej Jurasek. Look, we've discussed enough hours and dedicated enough time to him. He's had arguably a more interesting day than we have had. And I'm just going to play, because actually we've got, and I hope he doesn't mind me playing this, we had me and Paddy had an email from a Norwich City fan called Jack Rampling, who just happened to find himself at the Sparta Prague game today. He was watching on as events unfolded. I'll play you the voice note that he sent us, because I think that's a better way of explaining the afternoon that Matej Jurasek has had. And again, for context, for those who don't know, obviously Matej Jurasek joined Norwich from Slavia Prague. He has now joined Sparta Prague. They are rivals. I will let Jack take it over from here to explain the day that he has had watching Matej Jurasek's debut for Sparta Prague.
Paddy, hello. It's my name's Jack Rampling. I'm a Norwich fan, and I'm actually at Sparta Prague today, watching Sparta versus Tbilisi 4-1 win. The reason for the voice note is that Matej Jurasek came on 80 minutes, and a cacophony of boos rung around the stadium, the like of which you've never heard before. It was unbelievable. Every time he touched the ball, heckling, whistling, the ultras absolutely furious. And then at the end of the game, all the players were walking off, and then there was a huge altercation between the ultras and the manager and the goalkeeper and the captain, all going backwards and forwards arguing about Jurasek and his previous comments when he played for Slavia Prague. But we've been speaking to people coming out of the stadium, and the common view here is that he will never be accepted at Sparta Prague. It's absolute anger on levels I've never seen at a football ground. It was ridiculous what was going on. And I just thought that you would want to know that, because this is a story that you will want to write on the pinker. He said, death to Slavia, death to Sparta, death when he played for Slavia. And every time he touched the ball, they were singing, singing, heckling, catcalling him, whistling. It was absolute pandemonium. And it ended up with just this big standoff between the ultras and the club, in effect. And they wanted him to speak on the mic, and he sort of didn't. It was crazy, absolutely crazy. But yeah, look it up. It was really unbelievable. But yeah.
And we thought we had an eventful day. Thank you, Jack, for sending that. And hopefully you didn't mind me playing it, but it was much better context than I would be able to provide. And it's an additional subplot, Adam, to what is clearly a move that, certainly from the player's perspective, you have to wonder what sense is it in putting yourself in a position like that?
Yeah, for someone who's played for the opponent on the opposition side, you think you'd be well aware of maybe that rivalry and what that would mean. I mean, obviously
imagine doing that.
We've obviously got someone we could maybe, well, if he could speak better English, we could have spoke to about maybe making that move across a border, or maybe less so in terms of Prague, just moving across the city. But I think you maybe do take into account some of his actions previously with Slavia. I can understand in that sort of environment and sort of the fanfare you get in countries across Europe like that, why they haven't taken to him, why they won't take to him, because I'd imagine if hypothetically Norwich were to sign a player from Ipswich who had gone on the mic and sung anti-Norwich chants, you'd be a little bit reluctant to accept them as one of your own, despite maybe performances or whatnot, because you know you support your team, you're loyal to them, and you don't really want someone who you maybe deem as an outsider coming in and sort of playing for you. So I'm intrigued to see how that's all going to play out. Clearly for him, and maybe his agent felt that it was the right move for him to get him back across to the Czech Republic. His homeland, never really felt like he settled properly here at Norwich. But then you've maybe got a question, would you go to a club like that where there is going to be all of this sort of political elements almost to it, which is going to probably, for a player who goes off confidence, I don't feel like that's going to be the most motivating sort of situation for him to walk into. Maybe it will be, maybe he'll take it the other way and he'll almost try and prove a point to say, look, you know, I can do something for this side now and I play for you guys. But I think off the basis of maybe some of what he's done previously, that's not going to be the case. So time will tell. But for Norwich, it's still a good deal to get a player off the books who, okay, they maybe didn't want to shift on. I think there was clearly a willingness to try and give him another opportunity. And over pre-season, I felt like he maybe contrast the sort of early game against Kings Lynn and Philippe Clement's comments after that, I thought his time at Norwich City was definitely over. He then sort of started to maybe come back and there was a few flashes of good moments. I felt even last week against MK Dons, he had that opportunity where he almost tried to do too much with it. Probably should have just hit it, and you never know if it finds the back of the net. But for Norwich's sake, probably good to get him off the books. Gives them that little bit more financial power now, hopefully, to go into the market to get the left-sided option they want. But yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see how life goes on for Mate over back in his homeland.
Yes, not the start he would have wanted, I'm sure. And look, it's worth saying he's 22. I'm sure stuff that he was saying 2 years ago as a 20-year-old guy is maybe not reflective for him to comment, really, is not reflective of his views. But Adam's right on the short-term aspect of that, Paddy, in that Norwich have got him out, and that is a wholly positive thing. But equally, there is a long-term element to this in that they could probably do with him doing quite well in this loan. There's a permanent option there that you would presume has been inserted because there's an incentive there for him to do well and play well and to get that activated. He may well do that. It's going to be against a tough backdrop by the sound of it, and we know how he struggled here. But equally, if he does go there and he struggles, it's going to be a wider point in terms of his character that could put off other potential suitors. So if you're Norwich, you could really do with this loan spell not starting in the way that it has for him today by the sound of that report there.
I'm immediately thinking I'm going to be checking when the Prague derby is here, because that could be worth watching.
Could he be the first player to get booed by both sets of fans?
We'll find out. If it's quite soon down the track, we'll find out in due course. I mean, the character point, you know, that you would fear for him a little bit, because I didn't see anything in his character or his makeup that suggested that sort of negativity would be, you know, either wash over him or he'd use it as fuel. So you would fear if that's the immediate reaction. I wouldn't think that's going to turn anytime soon, unless maybe he's able to perform on the pitch for them. But I mean, already after that voice note, thinking I don't think Norwich will be getting the buy option of that taken up, because if the feeling is that vociferous against him and against their club, then that's probably only going to intensify from here. So you know, it's hard to see why the officials at that club would, you know, this time next season look to make that a permanent deal. You know, but you know, we'll see. Time will tell. It's very, very early in his timeline there. But there's nothing about that deal that suggests in the mid to longer term. Yeah, short term, great from a Norwich perspective. Now, you know, the terms of the financial saving they make with the wages, which could then be repositioned maybe for or added to whatever they can put in place to get the left-sided option brought in. That's clearly a very big positive, but mid to longer term, if we take that at face value, I don't think he'll be going there on a permanent basis. But if he is able to play enough and show enough, then yeah, that shop window element has to be uppermost in the thoughts of, you know, Norwich people, because, you know, it always felt a bit of an uneasy alliance, him and Clement, in the sense of, and Clement was very candid yesterday, he's not the profile, I don't think, of wide player he's looking for. He doesn't clearly feel he's good enough to be in the 10 conversation. So, you know, we know it's a player that Philippe Clement inherited. If Philippe Clement remains here for any great length of time, then I don't see a future for Matej Jurasek. Otherwise, you don't let him out of the building this summer. So, yeah, they definitely do need him to either go on and somehow or other change hearts and minds and either land that Prague deal, or probably more likely now, do enough that there'll be another club maybe on continental Europe who will look at him and think, given his age, given, you know, prior to Norwich, certainly he was very highly thought of in many quarters. You know, he was a full, I think he even got a full cap for Czechia, didn't he? So, you know, who are, you know, serial qualifiers for major tournaments. So, again, there's something to work with. You know, somebody came along to us, didn't they, in the City Stand today, and we're talking up, I hope this isn't another Christos Jolis type of can't do it here, but goes off and goes on and has an unbelievable relaunch to his career. I just don't see it, if I'm honest, looking at those two characters. But, you know, I think when Jolis was toiling in or heading to Bundesliga 2 and Fortuna Düsseldorf, you know, he would have been written off by most, I think, this side of the channel. So we'll see. But I think in the here and now, it makes more sense for Norwich than it does for Matej Jurasek, if that is the reaction of his new Prague fans. I'm sure, you know, there's not much he'll be able to say or do, I think, to change their opinion of him. So, you know, we'll just see if there can be some common ground that he plays enough minutes and contributes to a successful season for them. But, yeah, every aspect of this, I must admit, puzzled me when it first came to light in the last few days. And now we've had that voice note. That just adds to the sense that, you know, if it's been driven by him and his camp, then I'm not quite sure what the logic and the thought process is there.
Yep, thank you to Jack for that. If you ever find yourself on continental Europe watching a former Norwich City player, current Norwich City player, then send us a voice note. We'd like to hear them. Now, Paddy, you obviously missed our prediction pod on Wednesday, where Big Ewan did pick Jurasek as his breakthrough star. And as I've made the point a few times, he has technically broken out. So there is a theory that maybe Ewan was ahead of his time with that one. But you're not going to miss out. We're going to throw the same questions to you. I should have probably prepped you on these, to be fair. So we're doing these a little bit blind. You're obviously in Ireland. So very, very quickly, did you have a good time?
Lovely time with the family. Yeah, my part of the world. Father side of the family, so lots of cousins, lots of uncles, and a few Guinnesses, so it was good. Yeah, but obviously I couldn't wait to get back to the parched fields of Blighty and 30 odd degrees as we appeared at Stansted yesterday. But thankfully it was cooler today, wasn't it, Cairo, and well, long may that continue.
Yeah, it was. I mean, after Philippe had just finished his press conference, he came back through the mix zone where I was waiting for Harry Darling and said to me, I knew Paddy would be bad luck. So,
when he walked into the, I don't know if that was before or after, but
it was after, yeah.
Oh, well, he walked in and first thing he said, oh, why did you come back? As if I said, you can't blame me for that today. You know, blame Mr. Robinson and his officials, but, you know, if he wants to vent his frustration in any direction, you know, fair enough, I don't mind.
To be fair, I had the same on the live blog when Adam delivered them four goals, so that's the way it goes sometimes. Right, Paddy, your championship top two, please. Obviously, you've got the benefit of having a weekend of games. What value that adds, I don't know, but who would you, your top? Well, actually, no, I'll start where we started because we go on to broaden it out. So let's start with your Norwich pick. Where are Norwich going to finish in the championship this season?
I said to you boys before the game, I thought sixth or seventh for me. Parking what we've seen today, I just think there's a lot of variables in terms of what happens around the league. You know, the clubs who've come down, will they be able to get it going in sharp order? The Borough, the Southampton, the Middlesbrough, the Wrexham and Birmingham factors as well. They could quite easily see in all those cases them going on having strong seasons. So less about Norwich and maybe their limitations, and more, you know, the strength of the league, respective strength. But you know, we'll find out in a few months' time where the relative strength is this season in terms of the league as a whole. But that for me would be improvement from last season, also crucially into the playoffs as well. So I'd be hoping that, you know, around the top six, top seven.
Give us your top eight then, as it has to be now in terms of...
You put me on the spot.
I realise I should have prepped.
There's no prep
this.
At all.
Sorry.
On this. West Ham.
To win it.
Yeah, I think so. I think, there's always... what I mean, who would have put Millwall in and amongst it last season? So, you know, of an eight, I'd probably... West Ham, Borough will be there or thereabouts. I think Wrexham will kick on again, you know.
Ewan wasn't that hot on Wrexham.
No, was he not? No, interesting. No. Yeah, but I mean, I've not kept close eye on them, but I presume they've gone and spent a few quid this summer already, have they? Or if not, they probably will do before now and the end of the window. Norwich, obviously.
You keep count, Adam, here, because I'm not. That's got four so far. Four to go. Wolves, you haven't said them. Burnley, you still got... just to help jog in memory.
I need jogging. Yeah,
Southampton, I don't think
Wolves. Wolves would be in there. Yeah, I think Wolves will be in there. Not sure about Burnley. It feels like they do the yo-yo, but, you know, at some point, maybe a little bit like Norwich, maybe the elastic has to stretch a little bit too much and they can't quite get it together. I'm trying to think who had reasonable seasons last season in the Championship. Millwall. Yeah, it could be a stretch for me. For them. I think they massively overachieved, didn't they? But yeah, maybe for the top eight, they could sneak in. That's got to be seven or eight now, isn't it?
Southampton, don't you said them?
I'm very anti-Southampton after the events of last season. So even if I thought they were going to be in there, I'm not going to say them. I hope they have a terrible season. How did they get on today, actually? Because they're on minus four, aren't they? Yeah, we don't know.
I think it might be Monday.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
He'd have liked that goal today, wouldn't he, old Tonda? That would have been right up his street.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of the dark arts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He'd be delighted with that.
I think that's eight. Relegated three.
Southampton. no, I don't think they will go down. But you look at the clubs who've come up, don't you? I mean, how did Lincoln finish in the end? Because they were one
lost.
They did get beat. Okay, yeah. Well, you think that's going to be a stretch. Charlton. And... Portsmouth, I think they've overachieved. I know Kamara's just gone back there, but every time I see them, I just think, how have they amassed enough points to stay in the division? Maybe it's the Fratton Park element, but yeah, so I'm going to go those three. I think Cardiff will have enough, and Bolton, traditionally a club who should, for me, be in the Championship, and so I think they might just manage to scrape themselves enough points. So yeah, I'm going to go Lincoln, Portsmouth, Charlton.
Abu Kamara changed agents, which is interesting. Player of the season for Norwich. We'll try and rattle through these ones.
Player of the season. He's not started well today, has he, old Pella, to be fair to him. But Andre Brooks. Yeah, nice. I mean, when he got the ball the first time today, the decibel levels, you know, he's just, he could be electric. If he gets into a nice vein early on, few goals, few assists, you know, that could be a very exciting player on their hands, I think.
I think he's got the potential, hasn't he, to be that sort of winger like Huckabee used to be, where almost he'd get the ball and you'd hear the seats go because people would stand up in anticipation of something. Top scorer?
Big Jovan.
Put a figure on it?
20.
Nice. Breakthrough star, which you can interpret in any way you like. It can be a young player, can be a player maybe who's on the periphery at the moment, who's going to be a key player come the end of the season, however you like.
Yeah.
Or like you and someone who's just going to get out in the next couple of days.
Yeah, yeah. Breaking out of Norfolk star, yeah. Well, I mean, you could debate whether he's already in the mix and he's not really one who would break it out. But I think we've been all impressed, us boys, with Jacob Wright in pre-season. And
I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I haven't got quite around to watching, so I'm not copying you on that one, Connor. But I just think... at the moment, yeah, McLean and Mattson look strong as a pairing, but the season is long, and if Wright can come in and grab his opportunity, he physically feels a bit more robust to me. He certainly added that tigerish element that you felt Clement was asking from him. We know what how good he is technically and on the ball and set pieces and the delivery. But yeah, so I wouldn't bet against him maybe dislodging one or two of those, which would be a big call. But, you know, if he's going to break out, then he's going to, you know, he's going to have to break past a few seemingly inked in players. But I think we've all seen enough of these seasons that whoever you think is going to be the main people this stage of the season might not necessarily be the case. So, yeah, let's go Jacob.
Just aesthetically looks like James Maddison at the moment with the hair and the tattoos, which is not a bad thing, but there you go. This one, I'll give you a bit of help for your rogue Norwich City prediction. Now, I'll tell you what me and Adam picked. So I sort of went for two. So my first one was for Norwich City's defenders to get, and I'll include the fullbacks in this, and I said because Kellen Fisher never scores, which is apt today, given he had five shots and could have had a hat-trick, between them as a unit to score more than 10 goals. I also said as an additional one, Norwich not to get a red card this season. Ewan's was probably the roguest in terms of a goal for Vladan Kovacevic at some stage, which would be great. Remind me what you went for, Adam.
I went a good cup run.
Like
quarter, semi-final.
Yes. So there you go. That gives you an idea of the sort of thing that we went for.
Okay. I'm going to go, whether it is a rogue or not one, but I think Ben Crezeny will emerge as Norwich's first choice left back. Despite nice. Yongwa, despite Mahovo, when fit and available, I think he's another one. Like he alluded to you yesterday, Connor, people can all see there's players who've come back, and over the course of pre-season, they look like they've took a step forward. And for me, he's in that bracket. I thought he was good today as well. Yeah. You know, he was good on the ball in the first sort of 20 minutes, and you know, there was a few one-on-one personal duels. He was strong when he needed to be as players tried to turn him. So, you know, again, as we said with Jallo, one or two of us, Cernach, just stay fit, stay healthy, and I think he could really kick on. And finally, that is Norwich's number three, number Adam Drury, to put it that way. So let's go with that one.
Lovely stuff. There you go. Those are Paddy's predictions for the campaign. You can obviously go and listen to mine and Adam's and Big Ewan's on our predictions podcast, which is slightly out of date now. Obviously, now there's been a game into the Championship campaign. Not the start that Norwich City would have wanted, but it's the start nonetheless of another grueling Championship campaign. We can't wait. I'm sure hopefully you can't wait as well. We'll be doing pods after the majority, well, after every weekend game. That's the best way to put it. And we will be back next week after that first away game and trip to Millwall. Thank you very much for watching and for listening. Plenty more content to come over at pinken.com. We'll see you over there. Thanks for watching and listening. Good night.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.